Hey, welcome to the God is the Issue podcast with Brad Bright. I'm your host, Jim Brangenberg. Think about it. Our view of God determines what we think on all moral, cultural, and economic issues. It even determines how we vote. Hope for the future of our country and our world lies in our ability to make God the issue in every issue. Today, a conversation about not the separation of church and state, but the segregation of church and state. For decades, the cry has been the separation of church and state every time God and government overlap. Today, Brad Bright's going to attack this conversation and really talk about the fact that it's really not about separation, but about segregation of church and state. Brad Bright, welcome back to the God is the Issue podcast.
Thank you, Jim. Great to be back here with you.
All right. So what is the current landscape of the involvement of God and religion in today's public discourse as it relates to any governmental entity?
Well, let's start with a little bit of history, okay?
Okay, that'd be perfect. Start
with history, and then we'll launch into how we deal with the issue. But you have to understand really where this came from first. I kind of trace it back to 1948 with the McCollum versus Board of Education decision by the Supreme Court. And there they voted. It's not just a decision. They voted to prohibit all voluntary religious instruction in public schools during the school day. And that's where I say this really all started in earnest. That is the getting God out of schools, the segregating God out of culture. From there in 1954, of course, then you had the Johnson Amendment, which basically gagged churches and said, if you endorse candidates, we'll remove your tax status. That's never really been fully tested in the courts. And I think the reason why is the IRS knows that if it is, it's going to fall, especially under the current court. Then in 1962, you have Engle versus Vitale. And in there, they voted to ban voluntary prayer in public schools. And then in 1963, the next year, you had the Abington versus Shimp, in which they said, you can no longer read the Bible. You can no longer say the Lord's Prayer. And so again, they were prohibiting forms of religious speech. But this was the watershed issue that took us to where we are today. Because what they established is there has to be a secular purpose to anything you do in public school. It has to be a secular purpose. In other words, secular speech was given a clear preference over religious speech. It was no longer a level playing field, but secular speech was given the preference. And so that's where we are today. And, you know, in light of the First Amendment that says government may not prohibit the free exercise of religion and religious speech, that one decision basically says, yes, we will prohibit it. We will give preference to secular speech. You see, I strongly believe in the separation of church and state as Thomas Jefferson articulated. But I do not believe in segregation of church and state where religious speech is sent to the back of the bus.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about Thomas Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptist Association, which set that separation church and state precedent out there. All right, so besides these disastrous legal decisions, votes, what else can we observe that shows how much God has been removed from the public and prosecuted in the courts?
Yeah, well, I mean, you just see it all over the place. Nativity scenes have been removed from government properties and lands. Crosses are removed from government land. Coaches are prohibited, you know, from taking a knee and praying after a game. Florists are prohibited from exercising their religious beliefs. Florists are prohibited. Photographers, bakers, fire chiefs are fired because they teach the Bible, what the Bible says, at church, not on the job. But at church, we see this again and again and again. And so rogue judges and politicians and bureaucrats routinely send religious speech to the back of the bus. And these are all clear cases of segregation of church and state where we send religion to the back of the bus.
So what do you think is the real battle today driving the anti-God folks?
Well, I think Sam Harris, who's regarded as the founder of the New Atheist Movement, I think he summed it up very well. Let me read you his quote. He said, the big war is not between evolution and creationism. Did you catch that? The big war is not between evolution and creationism, but between naturalism and supernaturalism, or between materialism and the spiritual. And supernaturalism is simply the existence of anything outside the natural realm. See, his goal is to make atheism the belief of culture to the point where people will be embarrassed or feel ashamed to bring up anything about God in the public arena when they're out in public. See, the real battle is not between church and state. The real battle is between those who believe in God and those who want God to stay in the grave.
We're pretty close to that point already, aren't we?
We're very close. We're very close.
Why do you think some people want so badly to drive anything religious in nature, which I'm okay with that. We don't need any more religion. We need Jesus followers. But why are they so intent on driving anything religious in nature from the public square, including and especially religious speech?
Well, because it makes them feel guilty, right? If you don't have to hear about it, listen to it, you feel a little less guilty. At least you're a little more numb to it. But when people are talking, God says, well, that can really kind of make me uncomfortable. And people don't want to be uncomfortable. I think it really is that simple.
Wow. Okay. If that's what it is, there's a lot of non-uncomfortable people. But the reality of it is, even though we're not talking about God, they're still uncomfortable. They're still struggling with stuff because you can see it in their behavior. And when you talk to them, these are miserable people. All right.
Incredible angst. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so, but they just pretend. It's just all about pretend. When we come back, I really want to dig. Let's dig into the founder's intent when it came to religious freedom. Let's really dig into how things were supposed to be according to our founders. And then, of course, in the last segment, we're going to talk about how do we make God the issue in this issue of segregation of church and state, and how do we reverse this? You're listening to the God is the Issue podcast with Brad Bright. I'm your host, Jim Brangenberg, and we'll be right back.
Want to know more about how you can make God the issue in every issue? Get your copy of Brad's book, God is the Issue. Now in its third edition, you can get your ebook copy at brightmedia.org. Even better, if you subscribe to this podcast, you'll receive a coupon for one free download of God is the Issue ebook. Go to brightmedia.org, that's brightmedia.org, and get God is the Issue ebook today.
Hey, welcome back to the God is the Issue podcast with Brad Bright. Brad, we're talking about the segregation of church and state, not the separation of church and state, the segregation, which is totally different. When you say segregation, what do you mean?
I mean that religious speech gets into the back of the bus. That is, it's censored. That simple.
Okay. All right. Brad, we weren't there, but it sure seems that the founders were especially cognizant about the threat to religious freedom. Where did that fear come from?
Well, our history. You know, first the pilgrims came over, and many people came over fleeing religious persecution. And they came here in order to have religious freedom. And that is why they came. So that they could talk about the religious beliefs in the public square without fear of retribution. And our founding fathers were acutely aware of their own history and the founding of this country and the importance of religious freedom. And so as they framed the Constitution, they were very, very aware of this. But you know, whereas they fled Europe because they weren't allowed to talk about God freely, their speech was being censored and they were being persecuted. I mean, what does that remind you of that? That's kind of what we have today, right? Our religious speech is being censored in education in so many different ways. In business, our religious speech is being sent to the back of the bus. And that's what we fled from. Point of the first part of the First Amendment was to guarantee that would not happen again. But it has.
The power in England was in the Church of England, and whatever the church said happened, and you could never challenge the church. And I think, and it wasn't just them that were running away, but in Holland there was a big group of people. And our country was about, it was founded on Judeo-Christian principles, period.
And yeah, it was freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. That is a safe place for religious belief and speech, not where you get censored.
Right. Yes. And we're going to talk about Jefferson and his letter to the Danbury Baptist Association. But what did our founding fathers do about protecting religious freedom in our founding documents?
Well, I mean, right there, First Amendment to the Constitution, first part of the First Amendment to the Constitution says Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Did you catch that? Or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And what do we see today? It's prohibited there, I mean, everywhere. You know, the translation is, of what they meant is Congress should make no law establishing a church, right? A state church like the Church of England, nor shall they in any way regulate or censor religious speech. That was the whole point. So we truly would have freedom to practice our religion the way we saw fit and freedom to speak about it within the culture. And that's gone today. You see, the government is supposed to wear a gag when it comes to religious speech, but it doesn't. It censors it.
Why do you think our founding fathers dealt with the issue, addressed the role of religion first, even before the freedom of speech, freedom of press, even the right to bear arms? Was it by chance, or do you think it was intentional?
Well, when you read the initial document, see, the founding fathers knew that freedom of religion was the foundation of all the other freedoms we enjoy. And that if that was stripped out, all the others would fall. I mean, the Declaration of Independence says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You see that? We're endowed by our creator with unalienable rights. They don't come ex nihilo. They don't come out of thin air. They were given to us by our creator. What are those rights? Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. You see, what they understood is freedom of the press, free speech, freedom to gather and assemble, the right to bear arms. All those were predicated on the right to practice our religious beliefs the way we saw fit. Without God, all the other rights collapse.
All right, so George Washington, our first president, the commander of the great Revolutionary Army, what did he have to say about this?
Well, he said reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. Now then, by religious principle, what did he mean? He meant Christianity. And you know that because he said it's impossible to rightly govern the world without God and the Bible. Specifically, he was not talking religion in general. He was talking about the Christian faith.
Yeah, it's fair to say that when people talked about religion back in the 1700s, they were talking about Christianity, and it wasn't with a negative, it wasn't attributed negatively. But in today's world, though, when you say religion, it comes across as a negative. And honestly, I really don't like religious people. Religious people, they hated Jesus. They killed him. I just think it's important to recognize that what Washington was saying was so good. It is impossible to rightly govern the world without God and the Bible. But he wasn't establishing a countrywide religion. They already had one. It was called Christianity.
Yeah, he was talking about, I mean, all that conversation was about the various denominations and sects within Christianity, that they didn't want any one sect to become the state church.
Did any other presidents weigh in on this conversation, the role of religion in America?
Well, a lot of presidents weighed in, but I think of John Adams, who was our second president, who said our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the government of any other. In other words, our government, our system is predicated on a belief in God, specifically the God of the Bible. I mean, it's crystal clear. That's what John Adams thought.
Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to govern to the government of any other. Oh, that's powerful. All right. French historian Alex de Tocqueville wrote extensively about America. He loved America. Did he say anything about the role of religion in America?
He said a lot about the role of religion in America. You know, and he was a great scholar. He was French. He came over just to see for himself what America was like, what the dynamism meant. He wanted to take a close look at America and understand where our greatness came from. And so he said this, and this is a quote, I'll read it to you. He said, upon my arrival in the United States, the religious aspect of the country was the first thing that struck my attention. The religious aspect of the country was the first thing that struck my attention. He said, in France, I had almost always seen the spirit of religion and the spirit of freedom marching in opposite directions. But he said instead, but in America, I found they were intimately united. So that's the first thing I noticed. When I got off the boat, the first thing I noticed, you know, even he as an outsider recognized how closely our entire culture was tied to the Bible.
And he was so right. But if he came today, if he came back today, what do you think he'd write today?
Oh, he went to write those words today.
I think he'd say, sure. Holy buckets, what the heck happened? All right. And finally, since we're talking about the segregation of church and state, which is kind of a playoff of the separation of church and state, what exactly did President Thomas Jefferson write about in his letter to the Danbury Baptist Association? Because so many people think that it's a law on the books. But what did he say?
No, it's not a law, but it gives us an idea of at least Thomas Jefferson's thinking behind the First Amendment. And let me just read you the quote where he deals with it. He said, I contemplate with sovereign reverence the act of the whole American people, which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion, that is a state church, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. In other words, can't censor religious speech. He said, thus building a wall of separation between church and state. In other words, it was to gag the government. It was to gag and tie and bind the government from injecting itself into religious issues.
Yeah. It was to protect not the state from the church, but the church from the state, because the state was already established on the laws of the Bible and on the freedom given to us by Christ. All right, before President Abraham Lincoln was killed, he made one huge step in recognizing God's sovereignty over our nation. What did he do?
Yeah, the last official act he did before he was shot is he signed the bill to put "In God We Trust" on all of our currency. And that was his final legacy and gift to us, for which we should all be grateful. But here again is, in light of current decisions of the court, what secular purpose does that serve? Well, it doesn't really, does it? Which means it's only a matter of time till a liberal court comes and tries to strike that down. You mark my words.
Well, it's already been talked about for sure. Brad, where in the world did all of this go so sideways? Who was the last president who actually respected the rule of God in our land? Do you have any resources we can reference, any places we can go to find out, get some perspective on this?
Well, I mean, David Barton at Wall Builders has done some great stuff. Bill Federer has done some great stuff, especially on the founders. You can go to either one of their places, and they have a ton of material for help you to really begin to understand where we've come from. But in terms of presidents, it's hard to say what the spiritual depth of spirituality was of each of our presidents. But, you know, Eisenhower proclaimed the National Day of Prayer. Reagan codified it. He also proclaimed the 1983, the year of the Bible. Both of the Bushes, Clinton and Trump, have done official events at the White House for the National Day of Prayer. I mean, you can't use it as a litmus test of what's really in their hearts, but at least they were paying lip service to the fact that this is a part of who we are as a people, you know. But we didn't get here because of one event. We've gotten here because of a series of events over time. And it's going to take time to get out as well.
You're listening to the God is the Issue podcast with Brad Bright. I encourage you to go out to our website, brightmedia.org, to get some more details and have Brad be able to get access to some of his resources are out there. When we come back, we're going to finish up. How do we make God the issue in this issue of the segregation of church and state? We'll be right back.
Brad Bright travels the country speaking and training people how to make God the issue in every issue. Go to brightmedia.org, that's brightmedia.org, to find out how you can bring Brad's highly interactive workshop to your area. It's fun, engaging, and most important, it will help make you more effective in making God the issue in every issue. Go to brightmedia.org, that's brightmedia.org, and schedule Brad today.
Hey, welcome back to the God is the Issue podcast with Brad Bright. Brad, we're talking today about the segregation of church and state, not the separation of church and state, the actual exclusion, sent into the back of the bus, the church, which goes against everything our country was founded on. As we've studied in the last segment, we really talked about the founding fathers and how intentional they were about building in the protections for the church, protect them from the state. When you said in the last segment, I ardently believe in the separation of church and state, but not in the segregation of church and state. What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is, let's just define the terms. Separation of church and state means the government can't censor religious speech or religious activity. It's basically hands off. It's freedom of religion. It protects religious speech. Segregation of church and state is where we send religious speech to the back of the bus, like in the Abingdon versus Shemp decision, which I mentioned a few minutes ago, where it basically gave secular speech preference over religious speech. It's freedom from religion. It prohibits religious speech. So just so that we're clear on what our terms are here, that's what I mean by separation of church and state versus segregation of church and state.
All right, and as we close out the podcast today, I want to give us some specific examples of how we make God the issue in some specific instances. For instance, let's talk about how to make God the issue in the issue of segregation of church and state. How do we do that when religious speech is attacked in schools? Kids writing papers and actually saying they believe in creation or whatever it may be. How do we do that? How do we make God the issue there?
Well, it's simply asking the question. It's just a very simple question. Should judges and school administrators censor or protect religious speech in education? Just a simple question. And use the word censor, because censor is a strong negative word, and no one wants to be on the side of censoring speech. So that's why I say, should judges and school administrators protect or censor religious speech?
Just a simple question. Okay, all right. And what about when the free expression of religion is attacked when a high school football coach takes a knee after the game? How do we make God the issue there?
Well, we have the same question. Should administrators and judges censor or protect the right of a football coach to take a knee and say a prayer after a game? Again, censor or protect. Those are the two words we want to use, juxtapose.
All right. What about when a student is attacked for wanting to pray in a classroom? First of all, kids, we can pray anytime we want to. We can pray with our eyes open. Here's a new one. But how do we make God the issue when a student is actually attacked for praying?
Praying or even talking about God and how God is relevant. I mean, they get attacked for that as well. Same thing, though. Should school administrators protect or censor the student's religious speech? That's just, again, the words protect or censor. That's the juxtaposition you want to use.
All right, teachers in public education are technically protected by the Constitution of the United States because they work for the government, so the government offers them those protections. How do we make God the issue in this issue when they freely talk about their faith? I mean, teachers can talk about their sex life, but they get in trouble if they talk about their faith.
Again, we ask a similar question. Should teachers be allowed to talk about issues of faith when it's appropriate to the subject, or should their speech be censored? Again, it's that protect versus censor language. That we should be using that all the time. Censorship is a evil thing in American society, right? Americans view that as evil by and large. Let's use the word.
Okay, when it comes to speech, free speech, as protected by the Constitution of the United States, when it's attacked, and it's attacked all the time, how do we make God the issue in that issue?
Well, it certainly in the realm of education, we need to ask, do you think the purpose of education is to promote or censor speech, including religious speech, for everyone, regardless of race, gender, or religious belief? Again, it's that protect or censor. In this case, promote versus censor. What should the education do? Should it promote or should it censor? No one wants to say censor.
So it's all about, do you think it's right for a judge to promote or to censor? Okay, the final part, this.
I'd usually say, is it to protect or censor?
Protect or censor. Okay, protect or censor. All right, because we don't want them to say they're promoting it, but they're protecting it. All right. You mentioned at the beginning of this whole conversation, beginning of the podcast, that you think secular speech is given an up, given a preference over religious speech. Is it true? Give an example of how we can make God the issue when we face this issue when we see that we feel like secular speech is given a preference.
Well, that's just like you were saying. We just ask, do you think it is fair? You know, Americans tend to be fair-minded. They think they're fair-minded, at least. Do you think it's fair when we give preference to secular speech over religious speech? In other words, do you think it's fair to gag people because they believe in God? Just very, very easy.
Do you think it's fair to gag people because they believe in God? I think most people would say no today to that.
I think they would too. When you put it that way, most people are hesitant to say, well, yeah.
All right. All right. Brad, in closing, is there any hope? Because it sure seems like there's a lot of attacks here. Is it a foregone conclusion that the segregation of church and state is inevitable and irreversible?
No, but it depends upon what we do today. You know, we need to go out there and do a little bit of education. We need to reframe the conversation. We need to help people understand the difference between separation of church and state and segregation of church and state. Help them to understand the difference of freedom of religion and freedom from religion. We need to help them understand the difference between preferring secular speech over religious speech or creating a level playing field where we no longer censor religious speech. We need to help our fellow Americans understand why freedom of religious speech is critical to our future as a country. And bottom line, we need to help them understand who God really is and why it matters.
Brad Bright, thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks for joining us today and listening in on the God is the Issue podcast with Brad Bright. Remember to check us out online at brightmedia.org, brightmedia.org. And always be kind, compassionate, and shrewd while making God the issue in every issue.